It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. What does debt say about the viability of a political candidate? Marco Rubio dealt with this question in 2015 when it was revealed that he had struggled with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt until he got a book deal in 2012 after he was senator that paid him $800,000. Much of his debt was student loan related, but some of his financial decisions were questioned. $80,000 for a speedboat, for instance, or the decision to liquidate a retirement account, which was simply not seen as good financial decision-making for a guy who was thinking of overseeing the treasury of the richest country in the world. Now there's Stacey Abrams, the Georgia Democratic gubernatorial candidate, has $96,000 in debts from paying for college and law school, and about $77,000 in other debts, some of which she says she racked up when she was young and didn't know better, but some of which she says she racked up when she took care of her family after Hurricane Katrina. Are personal debts like this liabilities for candidates? Dan Bauman wrote about Abrams in the Chronicle of Higher Education, and he joins us today. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So how do voters take candidate personal debt into account when they're deciding who to vote for?
In talking to experts, they told us that for the most case, voters don't necessarily discount someone who has personal debts if they come from a middle class background. But implicit in attacks you see in Georgia and Wisconsin is that not all debts are created equal. Certain debts like student loan debt, credit card debt, are considered acceptable, while in Georgia, there's a tax on Stacey Abrams for the money she owes in back taxes. And in Wisconsin, Mr. Bryce is obviously being attacked for the back child support he owed.
Mr. Bryce, we are talking about Randy Bryce, who is a Democrat running against Republican Brian Steil for the first congressional House seat that's currently held by Paul Ryan. His child support issues, like, he worked those out with his ex-wife, right?
Right.
And how much does he owe? Do you have that off the top of your head?
At the time, it looked like he owed about $1,200.
And so these are things that people kind of deal with. Do you know what the response was to Marco Rubio? Are you familiar with that?
By and large, it seems like a shrug from voters, obviously, in the presidential campaign. And then after that, in his senatorial campaign, his personal debts weren't an issue.
And then Stacey Abrams is paying off the IRS, right? She's got she made a deal with the IRS to pay them off, like most of us do if we get an IRS bill.
Right. And so it'll ultimately be up to voters there whether the GOP line of attack is useful or is a dud.
So what is this line of attack trying to say about candidates?
It's tough to say. I think there's implicit in society is that there are acceptable forms of debt that you take out to create a life for yourself, and then unacceptable forms of debt that, at least in political circles, a case to be made that they disqualify you from holding higher office.
Is this a partisan issue? Are Republicans let off the hook when they have more debt? We have a president who has declared bankruptcy many times. His corporations have declared bankruptcy. Are Republicans let off the hook and Democrats are more on the hook?
It's tough to say. It's also obviously these things don't exist in vacuums. Mm-hmm. You know, whole sets of issues can affect whether people decide to vote for someone or not. And certainly Stacey Abrams, in making her case that she's a viable candidate and a candidate that speaks to working class issues, has said that her almost $100,000 in student loan debt and her $77,000 in personal debts helps her understand what the working class is going through in a way that her opponent simply can't fathom.
So we're talking about the newcomer versus the career politician. Is that an argument that you see working? This is not my thing. I'm a newcomer, although Stacey Abrams has been in the legislature in Georgia, so she's not necessarily a newcomer. But do you see voters saying, yeah, you know, this guy is a lot like me. He's a lot like my cousin, Vince. And I understand where he's coming from, whereas this guy has lots and lots of money and should be able to be debt free to run for office.
That's certainly the case that obviously Mr. Bryce is making and Ms. Abrams is making that. I'm not like any of the other politicians that traditionally come across your plate. I have debts. I had struggles in my life, and please vote for me because I think those debts give me powerful insights into what you're going through.
On the other hand, might it make people feel like, oh, you have debts, but that you can go into politics and cash in?
Certainly. To what extent that is disqualifying? Obviously, rich people can also go into politics and also cash in, and so it's largely what politicians put in the minds of voters about whether this is disqualifying or whether this will cause you to behave in an improper manner.
And does her opponent have debt at all?
He had some debts related to a personal business transaction several years ago in which some of his vendors and creditors are suing him in state court right now.
So he's under a lawsuit for his debts, and
right.
Yet he's throwing these bombs at Stacey Abrams for her debt. I don't understand.
Right. And that's where we get to the question of acceptable debt versus unacceptable debt. If either the public will ultimately decide is a red line.
Let's talk about class bias and race bias. Stacey Abrams is black and does not come from a wealthy background. Do we tend to give a pass to people who already have money and to people who are white than we do to people who are come from a more working class background and are black?
Well, obviously, there's those systemic biases exist. There's no question about that. In terms of the class question, our systems are certainly set up to favor candidates from a rich background or a more wealthy background. It takes a lot of money to run a campaign, but mm-hmm. It also you need to have the means and the time to be able to take off for 6 months a year to campaign. And so in order to do that, you need a job that allows you to either make some income in that time that is a relatively large amount, or you need to have a savings developed, and you need a job such as a doctor or a lawyer that allows you to take those hiatuses, as opposed to if you're working 9 to 5 or on shift work, you might not have that option. And so that limits who runs as a politician and also who ultimately represents taxpayers.
And let's just be clear here. Campaign donations cannot go to your living expenses if you're a candidate, right?
Right, exactly. And so that obviously puts stressors on if you need to support your family, need to pay your mortgage, need to just eat, not having a form of income because you're campaigning is a deal breaker in a lot of households. And so that affects who's able to make that deal and run and who isn't.
Dan Bauman is a data reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. His article about Stacey Abrams, the Democratic nominee for Georgia governor, is called "Does It Matter If a Political Candidate Has Steep Student Loan Debts? Georgians Will Get to Decide." Dan, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. One of the things that Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams says about her debt is that she ran some of it up when she was younger and she didn't know better. But even knowing better doesn't help you, or if you're living paycheck to paycheck, loaded with student loan payments and eating mac and cheese six nights a week. Our next guest is trying to help younger people picture the idea of saving for anything, much less retirement. Ariel O'Shea is investing and retirement specialist at NerdWallet. She recently wrote an article about how to save for the future when you can't yet imagine it, called If You Can't Picture Retirement, Bring Savings Goals Closer. Ariel, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I should note that you and our last guest, Dan Bauman, were on joining us by Skype. You recently wrote an article that aims to motivate young people by kind of helping them start saving for not necessarily retirement, because that may be too big of a goal, but just for financial freedom. Tell me about the difference between those.
So the idea is really that, you know, I saw this study that found that a third of millennials say they don't see the point of planning for retirement because they feel like anything can happen between now and then. And so, you know, if you can't picture retirement, you should understand that having money saved gives you a lot of options that don't necessarily involve retirement, right? So it might mean that if you want to change jobs and take a lower paying one, you can do that because you've already, you know, gotten a lot of money in the bank while you had that higher paying job. You know, it might mean that you could take a couple months off and travel, or even a couple years off and travel, because you've really, you know, saved in advance and you have enough money in retirement savings that you can take a break for a while. So all of those things are also reasons to save. And those can be bigger motivators when you're young than something that's, you know, 40 years away that you can't even picture happening.
But this affects how they put the money away, because if you're going to put the money away into a retirement savings account, as that's actually one of the things that Marco Rubio was criticized for, you can't take it out early without incurring very large penalties. And that's it's sort of like makes it not worth saving. So if I'm going to save for possibly taking a vacation or taking a year off, or if I get, you know, if I lose my job, then I'm saving it in a different account, and I'm saving it after taxes, right?
So that is true. With most retirement accounts, you will have a penalty if you take the money out earlier. I'm not necessarily suggesting, and this article was not at all suggesting, that you should take the money out of your retirement accounts or raid the retirement accounts for a vacation. 100%, I do not, you know, suggest that at all. The idea is that if you save early and you save a lot when you can save, then you may be able to take a break from saving or save a little less because you want to do these things. So you take a job that pays a little less, but it's really your passion. Maybe you can't maintain the savings rate that you had, but that's okay because that savings rate was really high. So, you know, it's more about flexibility and optionality and that sort of thing, and really sort of kicking your savings into high gear when you can, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. And there may be times that you, you know, need or want to save a little less because you're prioritizing other things, and that's okay. So the suggestion is not, you know, to empty these retirement accounts. Although, you know, if you are in a situation like, you know, these hard times that I talked about, where there's a layoff or something like that, and you are really, you know, have no other source of money, there are ways to get, you know, at the money in your retirement accounts. And if you decide that that's something you need to do, you know, a Roth IRA is an account that has a lot of flexibility. But that's like a super last resort scenario, for sure.
We are talking with Ariel O'Shea. She is with NerdWallet, and she has recently written about how people, young people, can start saving for something called financial freedom when retirement may be a little bit daunting for them. Are you a young person that has started saving for retirement? What motivated you, and how did you do it? Got some advice for fellow young people out there. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ariel, I want to talk about this pessimistic mindset. There's this idea that, you know, I could die before I even get a chance to retire, so why not use the money now? Where does that come from, and is it true?
I think it comes from this idea that, you know, it's really hard if you're young. I mean, I'm 35, so I'm sort of in this boat. I think it's really hard to picture retirement. You know, you can't picture getting there. You can't picture a time when you won't have to work. You can't picture saving enough money to even make retirement an option in a lot of cases. And then also, you know, I don't know that this survey that I cited actually that the millennials meant that, you know, they might die before retirement. I think they meant sort of, you know, they, some of them may have meant that, some of them just more broadly were saying, you know, anything could happen to me. Why would I, you know, think about this thing so far in the future? But, you know, you're a lot less likely to die before retirement than you are to actually reach retirement. I mean, life expectancies show us that. And so it's really something that you, you know, should be planning for. And if you do that early, then you have to actually save less money overall, and you're much more prepared. And like I said, you know, if you want to dial back or you need to dial back, you already have those investments sort of churning in the background while you do that. And they're going to keep growing because you've invested them, and they'll keep racking up market returns. And so, you know, it's a hard situation, because when you're young tends to be the hardest time to save, mm-hmm. but it's also the most important time to save.
So let's talk about that. Is there a minimum salary that you people can start saving, that, you know, they can live? They're not eating mac and cheese 6 times a week. They can pay their rent. Maybe go out to dinner every once in a while, and then also put money away.
I can't give you. Do you mean like a minimum salary where you should be able to save?
Yes.
I can't say, because that really, you know, it depends on your cost of living and all these other factors. But what I would say is that even if you can save, you know, 1% of your salary to a 401k, even if you can put $20 or $30 or, you know, even $10 in an IRA every month. What you're doing, even though those might feel like really small amounts to you, is building some momentum and getting yourself in the habit of saving. So, you know, even putting those little amounts away does matter. So I would say, even on a small salary, if you can just, you know, put a few bucks a month away, you'll start to get into that momentum and that rhythm.
What are some of the things that people, young people, may not be considering when they sort of brush off the idea for retirement? Like, what is going to happen to them if they don't have enough money in retirement?
I mean, what will happen is that they will be living very lean, probably, you know, on Social Security. They may not be able to retire. We hear, you know, a lot of statistics that say people approaching retirement don't have very much money saved. And what that really means is that they're approaching retirement age, but they may not actually be retiring, right? Because they don't have that money that allows them to walk away from work. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that can happen. And also, you're missing out on these really important savings years when, if you get your money invested early, like I said, it has long, you know, it has longer to grow. And that means you actually have to save less overall, because investment returns are really going to, you know, pick up the gap and help you out. And so if you miss out on those years, you're actually going to force yourself to save more if you want to meet goals.
Investment returns, meaning compound interest.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they should be saving. You know, Stacey Abrams, who we talked about earlier, said that she got into debt because Hurricane Katrina happened, and she had to take care of her family. How much of that are 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds thinking about in the future, that they might have responsibilities that they don't necessarily have now?
I mean, I hope they are thinking about that, because that's one of the things that I talked about in this article, right? Those kinds of things can happen. And when those things happen, of course, you're going to have to stop saving or dial back your savings, because there are more important priorities at that time. And that's, you know, totally reasonable. But what you can do to prepare for them is save as much as you can when you can, so that you're in a better position if something like that happens and you do have to stop saving or reduce your savings.
We are talking to Arielle O'Shea. She is a writer for NerdWallet, and she wrote about how younger people can start saving for retirement. As she just said, $10 a month, $20 a month gets you in the habit, and compound interest actually makes that money grow pretty quickly. Are you saving for retirement? Are you listening to this program and thinking, there is no way that I can even afford $10 extra a month to put in my savings? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Arielle, You have a retirement calculator on your website, right?
Yes, we do.
And so how can I use that? Like, you know, what am I finding out there?
So it's going to ask you a few pieces of information. It'll ask you your current salary, how much, or your current income, how much you have in savings right now, and your age. And that will just with those three pieces of information, it will calculate how much you should have when you reach retirement and how much you will need. And it'll show you, you know, if there's a deficit or if those numbers match up. And then you can also add in some other information. You can, you can add in what you might expect to get from Social Security. You can adjust the retirement age. So if you want to retire a little later than normal, or if you want to retire a little earlier, those sorts of things. So it's really actually kind of fun to play with, and it tells you exactly how much more you should be saving each month now if you're not saving enough. So I think that's a really, you know, sort of clear directive that a lot of retirement calculators don't necessarily give. A lot of times you'll get this big nest egg goal without a lot of guidance about how to reach it.
That's really cool. Well, we will have that link on our website, and we'll have it on Twitter. Also, we are talking to Arielle O'Shea about retirement and starting retirement early if you are young. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Was there ever a moment in your life where you had to rely upon your savings to help you out of a rut? What happened? Do you feel like your non-retirement savings has given you the confidence and the freedom to make more choices in your life? How did that work out? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking this hour to Arielle O'Shea. She is an investing and retirement specialist at NerdWallet. So, Arielle, you mentioned a few minutes ago the Roth IRA, and we talked about not taking money necessarily out of your retirement account if you can get penalized. Let's remind listeners of the difference between a Roth and a regular IRA.
Sure. So with a Roth IRA, you're putting in contributions after tax, so you're not getting any tax deduction, in the year that you make the contributions. But then in retirement, you can pull out your money without paying taxes as income. So you're all of that investment growth that's happened in the account between when you contributed and when you're taking a distribution, all of that you're taking out without paying taxes. With a traditional IRA, you get a tax deduction when you make the contribution. So each year you make a contribution, you'll get a tax deduction for that. But distributions in retirement are taxed as income. So it really just depends a lot on whether you think you'll have a higher tax rate now versus in retirement. I understand that's, you know, a little bit hard to predict. Mm-hmm. A Roth IRA is typically pretty good for young people. And then the other difference, which I mentioned earlier, is that because the contributions that you're putting in have already been taxed, you can actually take them back out at any time. So not that I'm recommending that. These accounts are for retirement, but the Roth doesn't come with those penalties that other accounts do on the contributions. That does not apply to the investment growth. It's only on the contributions that you make to the account. You can take those back out.
Interesting. So if I'm 25 and or whatever, and want to save for retirement, am I better off having an IRA or, you know, some sort of a retirement account perhaps that my employer offers, and also a second savings account? And if so, isn't this kind of a big ask to people who are so pessimistic that they're not saving anything at all?
So you're better off getting any matching dollars that you might be offered at work. So if you have a 401k or other employer plan and your employer matches your contribution, you want to make sure that you're contributing at least enough to get that match before you look at other accounts. Mm-hmm. If you're contributing enough to get that match, then you can look at, you know, a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, depending on your tax circumstances, whichever is better. Or you can stay in the 401k if you like that plan, you like the investment choices, and it has low fees. So, but the idea, just again, with the article, is not that you should be you know, not saving for retirement and instead putting your money in a taxable account or some other, you know, even like a savings account, that's not at all what I was recommending. You should absolutely be using these retirement accounts. You should be using your 401k. You should be using IRAs. These have, you know, huge tax advantages that you want to take advantage of. But the idea is really that you are saving this money when you can, when you have the money to save, so that you have options in the future. You've been banking all this money all this time, and so you have options. You can potentially, like I said, take a lower paying job. You may be in a position to, you know, weather some financial emergencies, that sort of thing, because it's more about sort of either dialing back your savings rate during those times, and it's less about, you know, tapping this retirement savings early or for reasons that aren't retirement.
So if I want to start saving, I'm gonna set up a savings account. Are there different savings accounts that I can access depending on how much money I put in there?
So you mean non-retirement accounts?
Non-retirement savings accounts. So accounts that I could just have money in for emergencies or to take a vacation or whatever.
Yeah. So if you have a, you know, an emergency fund or a short-term goal, you definitely don't want to invest it the way you would for retirement. I mean, the purpose of that money is so it's there when you need it, right? You're more concerned with that money being there than, you know, having it grow. And so, you know, an online bank is a great place to put that money. Usually online banks pay more than, you know, your standard brick and mortar bank. And we have lists of those on NerdWallet as well, and along with the rates that they pay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, you know, investing for a longer term goal and you are already making use of retirement, or if you're investing for a longer term goal that is non-retirement, or you want to put away money and you're already making use of retirement accounts, then you can look at a taxable investment account. And so you could open one of those at a broker. We also have a list of those on NerdWallet.
And then also, if somebody just wants to, you know, just open up a regular savings account, do you advise that they do it at the same bank where their checking account is? Or should they, like, separate it off so that they aren't tempted to say, "Ooh, look at that. I've got almost $1,000. What can I do with it?"
You know, I think it helps to know yourself. If you're the sort of person who's going to be tempted every time you log in to look at your checking account and you see that $1,000 in savings, if that's going to be too tempting for you, then yeah, absolutely. Open it at a different bank. You know, if it's an emergency fund, you want to make sure that you have pretty easy access to that money. But if you don't want to be spending it for, you know, every little expense or, you know, ooh, I like this new pair of shoes, then, and if it helps you to not do that, to have it sort of out of your sight, then I think that's a great idea.
Sort of psych yourself out. So maybe people who are listening, and please, if you are saving for retirement, especially if you're younger, give us a call, 800-642-1234, email ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'd like to hear from you, even if you aren't saving for retirement. If you're listening to this and you're thinking, there's no way that I can start saving, there may be a way, and we want you to start thinking about it and talk to us about where you are in your life. 800-642-1234. So let's say, Ariel, that we're convincing people to start saving. What is the first easy step they could take right now to make this process happen?
So the first easy step is, again, if you have a employer-sponsored account, like a 401k is the most common version of that typically, and your employer offers matching dollars, just start there, right? And you will tell that plan that you want to contribute a certain percentage of your salary, and your employer will match that in some ways. Sometimes it'll be like 50 cents of every dollar up to 6% of your salary. And so that's, you know, free money. You don't find that anywhere else. It adds to what you're saving and increases your savings rate. And so that's the easiest way to start. And those contributions also come directly out of your paycheck. So you don't have to, I mean, you were just talking about being tempted by this, you know, savings account that's linked to your checking account. But the great thing about a 401k is that you don't ever see this money. It gets swept away before you get your paycheck, and you don't really have the option to change your mind.
Yeah, in fact, I was just sitting here thinking, I don't even know what's in my 401k, or even easily how to access it to actually see that. So I should probably actually figure that out. But we are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Have you started to save money? Do you find it daunting to save money for retirement? Do you think, I'm only 25 and retirement is a long time away, and you're not really sure how to start? 800-642-1234. So are there lifestyle changes that we need to make when we start saving, Ariel?
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's, if you're not able to save or you feel like you're not able to save, it's certainly worth looking at your spending to see where your money is going. There are, of course, situations where there just isn't any money left up at the end of the month. You are spending every cent on necessities, and I totally understand that. But if you're not sure that that's the case, it is definitely worth looking at your spending, even if you just kind of scroll through your bank online, or NerdWallet has an app that can track spending and tell you where your money's going. But you really want to know where your money's going, because that's how you identify any leaks, and that's often how you find, you know, extra money to save. And so the best thing you can do is actually save, once you've identified how much you can save each month, even if it's, you know, like I said, $20, $50, a small amount, save that at the beginning of the month, if it isn't automatically taken out of your paycheck like that 401k situation, because that way you're not giving yourself a chance to spend it, and you're saving before you spend, which is really important, because if you spend and then save what's left, often nothing will be left.
We got an email, actually a call from Sarah Green. She says in Green Bay, Sarah from Green Bay, let me put it that way. She says she's 25 and she's putting 15% into retirement in Roth and a 401k.
Sarah.
Yay, go Sarah. She says she wants to retire by 55. Go Sarah. And she wants to travel the world, but she needs money and time to do that. So that is what she's saving for. Thank you very much, Sarah. Nice future planning there. Ariel, we talk about lifestyle changes. We talk about figuring out how much you can save. I think for a lot of people, especially if they are really living paycheck to paycheck, looking at what they're spending and figuring that stuff out is terrifying.
It is. It really is. But the thing is that what's not terrifying, or what can help sort of calm that terrifying feeling, is having even just a little bit of money in the bank, right? And so, you know, aside from saving for retirement, it's important to have an emergency fund like we talked about. And I think there are a lot of really lofty goals batted around for how much you should have in an emergency fund. But honestly, if you can just have $500 or $1,000 in the bank for an emergency, that is going to help you a lot with, you know, some of the most common unexpected expenses, you know, your car breaks down, that sort of thing. And so that really helps calm some of those terrifying feelings, I think.
We are talking to Ariel O'Shea from NerdWallet. She's talking about retirement and starting to save, thinking about retirement, sort of changing your outlook in your 20s, and putting whatever you can away and saving for freedom, saving for the rest of your life. We're going to talk about this some more, and we've got some calls coming in. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking about figuring out how to start saving when you're young, or even if that's possible in today's economy. Do you not even know where to find the money to start saving? Have you tried saving money to give yourself more financial freedom, but had a hard time building up that cushion? Or have you tried and found that it's easier than you thought it was, and you've got a pretty decent cushion right now? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Ideas@WPR.org is where you can email us, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mary from Green Bay, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, what's your comment?
Well, so I'm 24 years old, and I'm married, and currently between my husband and I, we have a 50% savings rate, and a pretty good emergency fund because, as the person from NerdWallet was saying, it is easier to save when you're young. We don't have health problems. We don't have kids right now. So we're sacking it away as we can when we can.
So you are putting away 50% of what you earn?
Yes, it's approximately 52%, I believe.
Wow. I'm impressed, Mary. I bow down to you. That's really great. Good for you.
Thank you.
Ariel?
I'm clapping.
I know.
Good job, Mary.
Yeah, this is pretty awesome. We also have another caller, Katie from Whitehall. Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. So what is your comment?
I just wanted to say, I think my husband and I were in our late 20s, and I think we got really lucky getting our jobs right out of college in our majors. Because of that, we currently have 401ks with both of our companies. We have, my husband actually has a pension. We have about $30,000 in our savings, so about $15,000 in an emergency fund to cover about 3 months' salary, and own our own home, two kids, two dogs, and living the American dream.
Good for you, Katie. Thank you for calling in. I like these good stories, Ariel.
Yeah, these are fun.
So it seems to me, though, that if you want to save, the idea is to get a good job with a company that will match. This does not encourage necessarily entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship is you going out there and not necessarily having matching funds for your retirement.
Right, that's true. I mean, those matching funds are a huge help. There are self-employed retirement accounts, though, that have their own perks. You know, a lot of times you can actually put away more in those accounts than you could in a standard IRA and that sort of thing. So certainly that's not a reason to not save. You won't get those matching dollars, but there are definitely other perks of being self-employed, and there are retirement accounts to go along with those.
Good to know. We are talking about retirement and saving for retirement when you're young with Ariel O'Shea, who is a retirement and investing specialist at NerdWallet. She just wrote an article, If You Can't Picture Retirement, Bring Saving Goals Closer. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us also at WPR Mornings. Dion, who is driving somewhere in Wisconsin, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi.
Hi. My
comment is that, you know, when I started saving right when I got out of college, and I set short-term goals. You know, I wanted to get to 10,000, say, by the time I was 30, and 40,000 by 35, and so on and so forth. I set those goals, and I found it a lot easier, those short-term goals, to reach than to look at the long-term picture. And I think millennials, if they look at it that way, and start saving for short-term goals, that eventually add up to that long-term goal.
Thank you very much, Dion. Ariel, that's essentially what you're arguing, right?
It is. I think that's great advice. You know, like I was, when we were talking about retirement calculators, and I said a lot of times they'll give you this big, lofty, multi-million dollar goal, and you don't really know what to do with it. You know, what to do with it is to break it down into those short-term goals and sort of hit those benchmarks. So decide, you know, how much you need to save each month, how much you need to save each week, how much you want to have saved by certain ages. Anything you can do that can motivate you and can sort of chunk those big numbers down into smaller goalposts is going to help you, I think.
And we're talking about young people, but there are a group of people who were perhaps in their 40s, maybe 50s, who lost a lot of their retirement savings when the economy crashed. And this could also be what's behind the pessimism of young people. They saw their parents kind of go through this. How are our people who had to rebuild, how are they doing, and how are they, how much money should they be putting away now?
So, you know, it was especially hard if you were planning to retire or had just retired, you know, when the recession hit and you went to draw from your accounts. And, you know, you found that the value was down significantly, which happened to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so there are things that you can do, though, to help protect you from that happening. I mean, you can move some money into cash as you approach retirement so that you are not having to sell investments in case your investments are down. You have this pool of cash to tap. And so I don't think that that should necessarily, you know, scare millennials away from investing. The other thing is that while, you know, the recovery took a long time in the grand scheme of an investing time horizon, when you have, you know, a lot of times if like you've been saying, 25 now, you have a good 40 years until you retire, and then, you know, probably 20 to 30 years that you're going to spend in retirement. The recession really, though it was hard, those accounts recovered their value as long as people stayed invested, you know, mm-hmm. in not so many years. I can't remember the exact number, but it's certainly less than 10. I think it was, you know, around 7 or so.
We are taking your calls about retirement today. We've got Mike from Minocqua. Welcome to the program, Mike.
Good morning. I'm wondering if your guest could comment on companies that take their employees' 401k monies and they use them for investments, or they go bankrupt and those monies are no longer available for retirees.
And what specifically are you talking about, Mike?
I'm talking about companies that use their employees' 401k.
Okay, you want to talk about that, Ariel?
Okay. So you get to choose the investments in your 401k. And so you should be choosing investments that you're comfortable with. You can take that money with you as long as it's vested when you leave your job. So it really doesn't have anything to do with your company's financial state. What you want to avoid is having, you know, too much stock in the company that you work for. So actually owning the stock of the company that you work for. You know, obviously company stock can be a great thing, but you don't want that to be too much of your portfolio. So that should just be a small portion of your portfolio. Obviously you also work at that company. If your investment portfolio is made up primarily of stock in that company, you're putting a lot of eggs in that basket.
And is that the case, Mike? Was most of your 401k in the company?
Well, it's not actually mine. It's just stories that I've read about in planning for retirement.
The company that you work for does not own your 401k. You do. So I think it would be not legal if they did take that money away from you. We also have a question from Kirk. He emailed, as a millennial, should I factor in Social Security retirement in my retirement planning, or should I assume that there won't be any Social Security for me when I retire?
I would definitely not assume that there won't be Social Security. So you will get Social Security when you retire. You should absolutely factor it into your retirement planning. It may replace, you know, a smaller portion of your income than Social Security did for your parents, depending on how the program continues. But you will get Social Security. Social Security actually has a pretty easy calculator to use on their website that can estimate your benefit. And so you want to include that benefit when you're, you know, calculating your retirement needs. You know, like I said, the calculator on NerdWallet has a field where you can fill that in, and that'll reduce how much it suggests you save.
We have been talking about investing and a retirement, starting even when you are young, with Ariel O'Shea. She is an investing and retirement specialist at NerdWallet, and she recently wrote an article about how you can save for the future when you can't quite yet imagine what your future is going to look like. And it's called If You Can't Picture Retirement, Bring Savings Goals Closer. Ariel, it's been wonderful talking with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you are listening to The Ideas Network.